3:35, Jeff Katz, News Radio WRVA. It is Tuesday. Oh, we got lots of great stuff going on. And I got to tell you, in the background, we have a beautiful day. Weather-wise, goodness gracious, this is fantastic. And I would urge you, open a window, get outside. Tomorrow, early, rain is moving in. It's going to be really heavy in the morning. And depending on what I'm looking at here, is either going to stick around right through the afternoon or it's going to reappear in the afternoon. But any way you slice it, tomorrow is going to be a washout. President Trump has sort of a mixed record at the Supreme Court these days, but there were a couple of things that I thought seemed pretty positive. The Supreme's saying, yeah, you could revoke the temporary protection, if I understand it correctly, for certain people. Now, I am not an attorney, as you know, not even close. And that means that I bring in the very best that I can. Even if I were an attorney, I would still bring in the best legal mind. That, of course, former federal prosecutor, friend of mine, great guy, Joe Moreno, smartest lawyer on God's green earth. Counselor, thank you for being here, sir.
Jeff, you're too kind, as always, but great to be here with you.
It is always great to have you here, sir. Let us dive right into this. The Supreme Court has had one or two things to say about some of these measures that have come before them relative to the president. Is he on the winning side or the losing side when you look at percentages or at bats?
You know, I'd say he's on the winning side. I think that the vast majority of these several dozen cases, which are stalled at the district court level for various reasons, the vast majority will go to the Trump administration's favor eventually, but that's when they get to the Supreme Court. And as you've seen, only a few have trickled up there at this point because it takes a while, unless you convince the justices to accelerate it. And so I think, we can, you know, once we, before we dive into them, I think it's just, it's fascinating, not just from us, you know, for us legal nerds, but for everyone, I think, to see very much the civics lesson that we're getting these days, the difference between executive power and what the legislative does, right? The difference between regulations and statutes. What is exactly the role of the judiciary, right? Our Article III branch of government. And so, I think it's really fascinating to see the push-pull that's happening right now. And it's very clear, right? The left is using the courts as their last bit of power, right, to try to impede the Trump administration as best they can. So let's touch on the first one that you mentioned, which is the temporary protected status case, right, the TPS case for Venezuelan migrants. So Joe Biden, right, in his sort of infinite wisdom, stretched beyond the breaking point his powers of president in order to basically facilitate as much illegal immigration as possible. And so he took a system, the TPS system, which is supposed to exist for case-by-case situations where someone can make a credible argument that they are seeking protected status because the country where they're coming from is so unpleasant, is so dangerous, is so you know, difficult for them to be there. And let's face it, those places exist. I'm not saying they don't. But what President Biden did was he just provided this status to swaths of people. I think it was about 250,000 people from Venezuela alone. So here you have this sort of broad application of a program that was never meant to be used this way. Then you have the court stepping in saying, well, we know one president applied the program this way, but we're not going to let the next president reverse it. We want these to go case by case. So hundreds of thousands of cases, the district courts would want to kind of flow through the courts one by one. So we're talking about not only is the program misused, now the courts are making it near impossible to unwind its misuse. So that's the situation that was before the court this week.
And when you look at the comments or the decisions or what have you, or who was on which side, What did the people, what did the justices on what I would say was the other side, the folks who said, oh, no, no, we should keep doing this crazy thing where we let Biden apply it any way he wants, and then we tell Trump, no, you can't do it anyway except the way Biden did it. I'm assuming that's Kagan, Sotomayor, and Ketanji Brown Jackson. Is that, would well, those be the three?
That's normally the three, but actually in the TPS case, it went 8-1 with Brown Jackson being the only one. So
what?
You know you're in a bad position when you get
holy boy, if I would have taken the over under on that, I'm losing my entire wow. Is she even allowed to come to the break room anymore?
If you're the left, and this was your case, you know you've got a weak hand when you've lost 2 out of 3 of the progressives. I mean, that's pretty darn bad. You don't see that too often. And I think for those of us who on the legal side come at things with a more conservative, bent on things,
yeah.
I think what we find so frustrating with some of these judges or justices at the Supreme Court level is that you kind of always know. You usually know where they're going to come out because it's the favored, it's the favored outcome that they want. And then they figure out a clever legal argument, how to back into it. Mm. And, look, if that's the way they want to run their courts, that's, seems like that's the way they do it. The conservative side of being a judge of the judicial process is not to determine what the conservative political conclusion is. And then find a way to get there. It's to apply the law in a way as narrowly focused to how you believe Congress intended it to be, not how a creative president or secretary of DHS or other clever executive wanted to apply that law. And so I think that's why it's so frustrating when we see these wacky results from a court. Thankfully, in this case, we got a pretty sound result. Basically, where the court said, no, the Trump administration is free to unravel things. The courts cannot apply case-by-case determination, and the district court, therefore, has to let the Trump administration proceed with unwinding the program.
Joe Moreno is joining us, a former federal prosecutor, brilliant attorney, practices all over the world, is on media around the world. Joe, I want to ask you about another justice, actually two other justices, because while the left probably just outraged on many ways that Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson was the only one on, quote, their side on this case, a lot of the folks on my side of the aisle, the conservative side of the aisle, say, you can't trust John Roberts and this Amy Coney Barrett, man. She's like the latter day David Souter. She's gone all bent. She's not doing what she's supposed to. Is that the case, or are they so enamored with that judicial process that there's something else at play?
Well, I mean, it's kind of both, right? I think many of us on the conservative side have not forgiven Chief Justice Roberts for the Affordable Care Act decision, where he was the deciding vote in a 5-4 decision to allow Obamacare to exist, coming up with a very, very creative way to keep that statute alive. And so I think a lot of us, even though it's been how many years, haven't forgotten that. So there's substantive issues that Roberts comes up with sometimes, and it's also the process that you point out, that he and Coney Barrett are particularly against the idea of accelerating cases on the emergency docket to the Supreme Court. They like cases to go through their normal process, which is district court, circuit court of appeals, sometimes with a panel, sometimes with the full court, sometimes both, and then ultimately the Supreme Court, which takes typically 18 to 24 months or longer. So, and as far as Coney Barrett, I would, and even Roberts, I would remind people that most of the time they do come through with a more conservative read of things. There's the Dobbs decision, which of course overturned Roe v. Wade, where they were both two reliable votes on the conservative side. So I think usually when it counts, they can be relied on to come up with a reasonable interpretation of the law. But yeah, I mean, there's been some concerns even recently with this case on national injunctions, right? And whether district courts can just put a put the kibosh on something nationwide, even though it's only before them in a particular person in a particular district. And yet they say, we're going to apply our injunction everywhere. Right. And Coney Barrett, she raised some questions at the oral arguments recently that showed she may have some leaning toward the progressive argument here. So, again, the verdict, the jury's not out yet, so to speak. We don't know how she'll ultimately rule, but she did raise some questions that kind of raised some eyebrows on our side.
When you're looking at those district court judges and what many of us, I'm not speaking for you, but speaking for myself, I think they're definitely overstepping their bounds by having, as you say, one person, in some cases, just tangentially connected to their district and then applying this nationwide. You told us a week or two ago that it really had to be handled by Congress, that the Chief Justice, despite what most of us think, he doesn't really run the entire federal court system. And so since these districts are creations of Congress, they either have to defund them or change them. Are you getting any sense that anybody there wants to do that?
You know, if there's anyone to be a little disappointed with on our side, it is the Republicans in Congress, because it doesn't seem difficult to discern what exactly their priorities are these days. I think that one of them very much should be a look at the construct and the jurisdiction of our Article III courts, which, as you point out, other than the Supreme Court, which is the only court that is established by the Constitution, all the other 93 districts and their respective circuits above them are created by Congress. And Congress in the past has limited their jurisdiction over certain kinds of matters. And so it's probably going to be up to Congress to continue to do that. So if we think, and don't take my word for it, just look at the numbers. There's been an explosion of these district court nationwide injunctions under President Trump. There were virtually none before his first term. It spiked under his first term. Then they flattened out and they've spiked again. So you have very, very aggressive district judges applying their rulings nationwide. And again, if someone doesn't kind of pull the leash on them, it will continue. And I don't know if Chief Justice Roberts has the chops to do that.
Is Pam Bondi in a situation to say we are going to pursue some sort of legal action with decisions that were made inside the Biden White House? The more we know about where Joe Biden was cognitively, mentally, it's clear he couldn't make these decisions, the auto pen, all that stuff. Does she have the standing to go in, I don't know, to the Supreme Court and say we have to unravel all this stuff?
It's going to be tough. I mean, gosh, I think we all saw with our own eyes what was going on. And I think the gaslighting by the media was just unreal, basically working as an extension of the White House press office and covering Biden's tracks. Yep. And I do think that this is a ripe issue for Congress to at least hold hearings. I know those hearings don't always amount to much, but they are able to flush out what happened, because they can issue subpoenas and demand testimony. So at a minimum, I think we should see that, to see what exactly the former president's cognitive state was, his health state in general with this recent cancer prognosis. Mm-hmm. Hopefully he's okay. But the idea that this was just discovered last week is very, very sketchy. So to answer your question, yes, I think the Justice Department should pursue it, but there's going to be a lot of fact-finding first. And I think you're going to see a huge application or assertion of executive privilege. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to say, well, I worked for the president and I can't talk about what we discussed. And that's not a very solid concept. It's not like attorney-client privilege, which is very solid. Yep. Executive privilege has its limitations, but I think you're going to hear a lot of that for people who do not want to actually admit what they saw and heard over the last 4 years.
Interesting. Wow, it's always fascinating stuff, Joe. I am so grateful to you for always making time for us and always explaining this in ways that laymen like me can understand it. And I just thank you for it. Remind everybody, though, in addition to showing up here, which is fantastic, you show up all over the place, writings that are out there. Remind everybody where they can follow you on social media, where they can read you, etc.
Hey, you can catch me at The Spectator, which is an online magazine and print as well. It's a fantastic periodical that stems from our brothers and sisters in the UK. Mm-hmm. And I'm on the BBC a lot. So I guess I could say getting a lot of publicity from our friends across the pond. But always a fun time, Jeff, to join you and your viewers.
You are the best. Thank you, my friend. That is Joe Moreno, former federal prosecutor, but more importantly, the smartest lawyer on God's green earth. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRB.